So let's talk about CLL, really interesting disease. We're going to start out just talking about basically the biology of the disease and a little bit about it basically. And I really refer you to the discussions we're going to send out to you in Brad's discussion. He went through a lot of the basics. And Brad, maybe you can comment a little bit on sort of an overview of this disease.
Sure. So CLL is the most common adult leukemia, but 20,000 new cases a year in the U.S. And because people live a long time with CLL, the disease really accumulates in our population. It's generally a disease of older individuals. The median age is over 70. And so that creates some unique challenges to the care of these patients because there's always a lot of comorbidities and other medical challenges to deal with. It's not a difficult diagnosis to make. It's often found just incidentally on routine blood work. Patient is noted to have a high white blood cell count, get a differential. You see it's mostly lymphocytes. Do flow cytometry, and you get this characteristic flow cytometry pattern that you see on the slide, and that indicates CLL pretty reliably. There's a few additional pieces of information one would want after that, some prognostic markers, a CLL FISH panel, the IgHV mutational status. Those are newer developments, but those are very important pieces of information to have before making any therapeutic decisions for patients.
And one of the themes that we're going to get into in this series and in oncology in general is the use of biomarkers in trying to determine what kind of therapy that's used. And in CLL, there are a couple that we're going to talk about that are really important from that point of view. But in terms of clinical manifestations, Robin, there are a number of problems that you see with CLL patients. But two important ones are that are mentioned on this list here is marrow failure, so particularly anemia, thrombocytopenia, but also recurrent infections. And in some cases, people get IVIG. Any comment, Robin, about how CLL becomes symptomatic?
Well, symptomatic either if they're having recurrent infections, if they have either neutropenia or hypogammaglobulinemia, or if they have high volume disease, if they're developing B symptoms like unexplained fevers, drenching night sweats, weight loss, if they're having a lot of lymphadenopathy that's causing some discomfort, and certainly fatigue. Fatigue can be a very unexplained thing. You know, you don't know for sure if it's from CLL, but many patients will have that.
So Amy, one of the other things on the list there is recurrent infections. I'm kind of curious what your experience is with types of infections and how you manage that.
Yeah, so the infections really tend to be a lot of upper respiratory tract infections for patients with CLL, although the more they're treated and the less competent their immune system becomes, the more exotic infections they can develop. Typically, we've got them on IVIG by that time. It's usually related to their hypogammaglobulinemia, but it's always something that you have to think about, and this is definitely a population that even with all of these new drugs that are much less toxic than our old barbaric chemotherapy, we're always thinking about prophylaxis and always thinking about infection. Even though we have come a long way, we still have not eliminated that piece of the puzzle for these patients.
So one of the things I was mentioning is the issue of biomarkers, of studying the actual characteristic of the cancer and lung cancer. We'll talk about all the workups that are done for various genomic abnormalities. Check out Brad's talk where he goes through this in detail. But Jeff, I wanted to focus on some of the biomarkers that are looked at, particularly those that predict benefit. This is sort of a self-assess. We're going to put a few of these in here. They were in your quiz that you took just to think about the question. This question is, patients with CLL, which of the following factors do not respond well to chemoimmunotherapy? And Jeff, maybe you can talk a little bit about del-17p, T53, what that is, and kind of what the meaning is in terms of response to treatment.
Right. So when I first meet a patient with CLL, I frequently get these biomarkers up front. I will tell you that there's some reasonable practice variation. Some CLL specialists like to wait until the time of treatment, and you could make an argument either way. I find that a lot of my patients are pretty savvy on the web and see these terms and want to know how they may relate to other individuals as well. So I'll get the IgHV mutation analysis and the FISH test early on. And the way I explain this to patients is a little bit of an analogy of a car driving down the highway. And I'll say that CLL comes in two types of disease, and that's the mutated and unmutated disease state. And patients oftentimes think mutated means bad. That's not the case here, where mutated is actually good. And it has to do with where the CLL arises from in the life cycle of a B cell. So I say that if you are IGHV mutated, your foot is not on the gas, whereas if it's unmutated, your foot's more on the gas. And the fish panel in my analogy is how well the brakes work. So how well it's going to respond to chemotherapy. And this is a finding that was established in the late 90s and has withstood a lot of scrutiny over the years, that there's sort of a hierarchy where the worst are deletion 17P and deletion of 11Q. P is the short arm of the chromosome, Q is the long arm of the chromosome. And those are patients where when you give them chemotherapy, their response generally isn't as good. It's not as deep, it doesn't last as long. And so 17P is a part of the genome that holds a gene called TP53. So you can be TP53 mutated or deleted, both of them are bad.
So what this really relates to, though, is how people respond to treatment, Brad. And I guess one of the things that we've seen is you can identify, vis-a-vis that last question, patients who have abnormalities, and they just really don't benefit from chemoimmunotherapy. And I guess a classic example is this so-called 17P situation. Can you talk a little bit more about that, Brad?
Yeah, the big problem with the 17P deletions is the poor response to traditional therapies. If you take a regimen like, say, FCR, which typically would give patients responses that last for years, if they're 17P deleted, you might only expect 12 months out of it. So that's a lot of chemotherapy, a lot of toxicity to put up with just to get a 1 year or less remission. And the results are even less good for regimens like BR. So that's always been a huge problem for our patients. Before we had these novel agents, what do you do with the 17P deleted patients? We really didn't have good options for those folks. And this is where the novel agents can have a really big impact.